Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, February 7th, 2025. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Milliken, Dress to Impress. Exude that confidence, is a quote. Student Success Center helps job seekers feel professionally dressed. Milliken University junior Tim Petty was able to find a suit shortly after he began looking for an interview outfit during Dress to Impress, an event offered by the Milliken Student Success Center. Dress to Impress is designed to help students prepare for interviews by providing professional clothing while teaching them the importance of proper attire. Petty walked away with a gray pinstripe suit. I came here during the last event and they had a black one that stuck out to me, he said. But I didn't get it, he said. Somebody got it before me. The next step was to find a tie. I'm just trying to find something that will match, Petty said while looking at a blue paisley tie. I can wear this one more than once. According to Lindy Taylor, specialist for Milliken's career success and professional development, Dress to Impress is offered to the students during the fall and spring semesters. We want the students to feel good, to feel appropriate, to feel like they're professionally dressed, she said. If you feel confident, you're going to exude that confidence, and you're going to more than likely land a job, she said. The clothing is donated from community members, Milliken faculty and staff, and family members. Really anywhere we can get donations, and that they're appropriate, Taylor said. We want to make sure that they're professional, that they're going to set the students up for success. Each article of clothing, including suit jackets, dress shirts, trousers, ties, dresses, shirts, and shoes, is available for free. Volunteers were on hand to offer advice on a professional look, including the proper way to tie a tie and match shirts and ties with suits. We try to make sure that each student gets only one outfit, Taylor said, but we want them to have, if we can find it, a complete outfit. Zach Stroud from the downtown Decatur men's clothing store Brass Horn was ready to put his career expertise to work during the event. It seemed like a no-brainer to bring in donations that our customers have, he said. It was just great knowing it was for the community. With a measuring tape draped around his neck, Stroud was ready to size up the students for the appropriate suit or shirt. A lot of them, this was the first time getting a nice suit or sports coat, or even a nice dress shirt, he said, and it's been fun teaching them how to dress. One of the challenges has been explaining the differences between professionalism and fashion. Several of the students wanted to choose attire that's flashy, Stroud said. So that like something you'd see on the red carpet, he said, but this is for your interview and learning how to dress in the workplace. The volunteers found students are familiar with small, medium, large, and extra-large options. But in a suit, it goes by chest size, 40, 42, 44, 48 regular or short, Stroud said. The ladies had their own selections of dresses, skirts, slacks, and accessories. Milliken junior Beth Portman is majoring in business, but offered her services in helping other students on what to wear. I have a lot of business and formal clothes, so I usually know what to look for, she said. Overexposure is something to avoid, according to the fashion volunteers. Not too much chest, no stomach, Portman said. The shoes are usually heels or loafers, no tennis shoes. Subtle colors are important to the attire as well. Maybe a muted orange or red is nice, just a splash of color, Portman said. Abigail Urquhart, graduated from Milliken last year with a degree in theater design and production with an emphasis on costumes. She came back to her alma mater to offer her alteration services during Dress to Impress. I've been doing some hemming and a little bit of take-ins, she said, but it really depends on what the person wants. Urquhart has promised the students the clothing will be returned to them before the spring career and internship fair, which will be held on February 26th. I was told to have it done by the 20th. As an exchange student from the Netherlands, Anna Bonk, or Bonky, said that she doesn't need much. However, she was looking for a white shirt during the Dress to Impress event. "I want to be an usher at Kirkland, and I need a white blouse and maybe a black jacket," she said. Bonk, who also wanted to take advantage of the free clothing. She also wanted to do that. Take advantage of the free clothing. "Since I'm from the Netherlands, we like free things," she said. And the photo here on page A2 shows sophomore biology student Charisma Bond searching the racks of clothing at Millikan University's Dress to Impress event in Decatur on Wednesday, February 5th. And the photo on the front page shows Dean of College of Professional Studies, Andrew Smith, and Dean of Tabor School of Business, R.J. Podeshi, helped senior Waisu Lawal, and sophomore Isaiah Montgomery pick out ties at Millikan University's Dress to Impress event in Decatur on Wednesday, February 5th, 2025. And the students are, one is holding a jacket, another one is holding a tie, and the dean is holding a tie to kind of up to the jacket to see if it matches. And the other dean is looking on, and so is the other student. And then an inset photo, smaller one, shows Zach Stroud of the Brass Horn Men's Clothing Store, shows freshman Quentin Simpson how to tie a tie at Millikan University's Dress to Impress event in Decatur on Wednesday, February 5th. Also on the front page, immigration, Trump suing Illinois and Chicago. U.S. government says crackdown impeded by state's policies. The Trump administration on Thursday sued Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, and Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, alleging that state and local sanctuary policies were obstructing the federal government's crackdown on illegal immigration. The lawsuit, filed in U.S. District Court in Chicago, claims that the policies have the purpose and effect of making it more difficult for and deliberately impeding federal immigration officers' ability to carry out their responsibilities in those jurisdictions. The federal government is seeking to have the Illinois Trust Act and the city and county sanctuary ordinances invalidated under the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Trump has often singled out Chicago and Illinois, which have some of the nation's strongest protections for immigrants. Top administration officials last month visited the city to launch stepped-up immigration enforcement and showcased footage of border czar Tom Homan making arrests on live television. The aggressive approach and harsh rhetoric have been heavily criticized for stoking fears in immigrant communities and feeding false claims about crime among immigrants. Pritzker spokesman Matt Hill said that the state will defend the law in court. "Unlike Donald Trump, Illinois follows the law," Hill said. "The bipartisan Illinois Trust Act, signed into law by a Republican governor, has always been compliant with federal law and still is today. Illinois will defend our laws that prioritize police resources for fighting crime while enabling state law enforcement to assist with arresting violent criminals," he said. "Instead of working with us to support law enforcement, the Trump administration is making it more difficult to protect the public, just like they did when Trump pardoned the convicted January 6th violent criminals," he said. "We look forward to seeing them in court." The Trust Act was signed by then-Governor Bruce Rauner, a Republican, in 2017. It generally prohibits state and local law enforcement from assisting the federal government with civil immigration enforcement. Cooperation is permitted, however, when there is a federal criminal warrant. Chicago has had sanctuary city status since 1985, though the interpretation of the ordinance has changed over the years. The state and federal policies are meant to foster trust between immigrant communities and law enforcement by ensuring that interactions do not result in immigration detention or deportation. However, the laws have long been the subject of ridicule among conservatives and immigration hawks who claim that it impedes federal officials from doing their jobs. There have been various proposals from Republican state lawmakers over the years to curtail or fully repeal the state law. Legislation introduced last month would amend the law to allow state and local law enforcement agencies to cooperate with ICE if an undocumented person is charged with or convicted of a felony. It would also require a state or local law enforcement agency to notify ICE when they have an undocumented person in custody. The proposals, however, have never gotten far in the Democrat-dominated legislature. In a statement, Illinois Senate Republican leader John Curran, Republican of Downers Grove, accused Pritzker and Johnson of putting both law enforcement and Illinoisans at risk under the state's existing laws. Their continued refusal to put the safety of Illinois citizens before their own personal political agendas has now forced the federal government to intervene to keep America safe. Curran said before encouraging Democrats to put a Trust Act repeal up for vote. Hours after new U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi was sworn in Wednesday, she launched the administration's latest salvo against sanctuary cities, ordering an end to Department of Justice grants for jurisdictions that unlawfully interfere with federal law enforcement. Courts, however, have repeatedly upheld the legality of the range of sanctuary laws. In more local and state news on page A3, protesters demonstrate against Trump outside Illinois Capitol. House Democrats denounce president's early actions. This is from Springfield. More than 100 protesters demonstrating outside the Illinois Capitol and Democratic state legislators within it on Wednesday vowed to resist the policies of President Trump's administration and speak out against fascism. The demonstrators gathered near the Abraham Lincoln statue in front of the State House on a cloudy, damp day in Illinois' capital city, joined by thousands across the nation to protest the Trump administration's early actions, decrying everything from the president's immigration crackdown to his rollback of transgender rights and a proposal to forcibly transfer Palestinians from the Gaza Strip. Later in the day, the supermajority Democrats in the Illinois House passed a series of resolutions condemning Trump's early actions, performative gestures intended to respond to weeks of floor speeches by some House Republicans and to perhaps fire up dejected Democratic supporters. While Governor J.B. Pritzker has been among the most forceful Democrats in pushing back against some of the early actions of Trump's second term, many party leaders have struggled to find their footing allowing Trump's return to power, which has also left many of the Democratic Party backers despondent. "Sometimes it feels like there's very little we can do," said State Representative Sharon Chung, Democrat of Bloomington. "But with this, we're taking a very unified stand," she said. The protest earlier in the day was part of the 50501 movement, which stands for 50 protests in 50 states on one day, February 5th. It was organized online. The demonstrations in their sheer numbers were a far cry from the millions who lined the streets of Washington, D.C. and cities around the country to protest Trump on his first full day in the office in 2017. But what they lacked in numbers, they made up for in their urgency to confront what many perceived to be a dangerous time in the country's history. "We have to oppose the fascist takeover of the country and the destruction of the Constitution," said Tim O'Connor of Decatur. Protesters waved signs of various political messages, including trans rights are human rights, feed the poor, eat the rich, and stop white nationalism. One sign even depicted President Trump and Elon Musk with swastikas on their heads. Paige Johnson of Mascuda was advocating for those close to her. I have a lot of friends and family that are both women and part of the LGBTQ community, and I love them very, very much, and I want to make sure that they get to keep their rights, Johnson said. Meanwhile, inside the Illinois Capitol, the supermajority Democrats who control the Illinois House formally condemned some of Trump's early actions through a series of resolutions. They included measures condemning Trump's pardons of those convicted of crimes related to the storming of the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, and his now-blocked executive order freezing federal grant funds. They also condemned Trump's efforts to dismantle diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, and his administration's immigration enforcement actions. Another resolution called for Trump to drop plans for tariffs on Canada and Mexico, which were paused earlier this week for 30 days. The measures were performative, essentially amounting to strongly expressed opinions that hold no weight beyond that. Democrats said that the collective action was a response to speeches some members of the supermajority House GOP caucus have given in the weeks since Trump's second inauguration. As votes began on the resolutions, House Republicans walked off the floor in protest. At a hastily called press conference Wednesday evening, House GOP leader Tony McCombie, Republican of Savannah, said her caucus stood together for working families across Illinois and against the petty political games of the majority party, accusing the Democrats of grandstanding. House Republicans are here to work, not to waste time on political theater, she said. House Speaker Chris Welch, Democrat of Hillside, criticized Republicans for their walk-off, saying they couldn't stay to do their jobs and speak out against fascism. What's coming out of Washington, D.C. can be summed up in one word, fascism. Fascism. Fascism, Welch said. They should be here to speak out against fascism. We cannot be silent. We must rise up. Speak out. We cannot walk out on the people that sent us here, he said. McCombie called Welch's remarks unhinged grandstanding and a distraction from the issues facing the state. If Speaker Welch needs ideas on how to serve Illinois families, House Republicans have solutions to get the job done, she said. Republicans declined to address the substance of the resolutions. Illinois lawmakers will return to Springfield in 2 weeks when Pritzker will deliver his annual budget address. Protesters demonstrate against the photos here, and the caption is, protesters demonstrate against President Donald Trump's policies outside the Illinois Capitol in Springfield. They joined thousands across the country, decrying everything from the president's immigration crackdown to his rollback of transgender rights. And there are two people standing here. One is holding a sign, and it's got a drawing of a face and teeth, and it says, liar, liar, liar. And then it says, blah, blah, sounds like it's time to paint, P-A-I-N-T, the town blue, and blah, liar. And the larger photograph here shows part of the Capitol. And protesters demonstrate against President Donald Trump's policies outside the Illinois Capitol in Springfield. They joined thousands across the country, decrying everything from the president's immigration crackdown to his rollback of transgender rights. And the one sign here shows the, looks like a drawing of the top-hatted guy from the game Monopoly with the top hat and mustache, and his head's on a plate with X's for eyes, and it says, feed the poor, and then eat the rich. His head's on a plate, and a knife and fork is on either side of the plate. And then there are other protesters in the background. A smaller sign said, no one is coming to save us. We have to save ourselves. And I can't read the other ones. Shelby County, another sentence, but no more time for ex-teacher. Shelbyville, an ex-teacher sex offender, already incarcerated, was punished with an additional 3-year sentence Wednesday, but won't spend a day longer behind bars. Jason R. Engler was transported from the Graham Correctional Center to Shelby County Courthouse, where he pleaded guilty to a charge of grooming. This accused him of gaining the trust of an underage girl in an attempt to sexually assault her. The 46-year-old defendant is already serving a 5-year sentence imposed in December in Moultrie County Circuit Court after he pleaded guilty to another charge of grooming and contributing to the delinquency of a minor, the offenses involving a second girl victim. Shelby County Special Prosecutor Elizabeth Dobson had argued the new 3-year sentence should be served consecutively to the earlier 5-year term, but Judge Brian Kibler would not go that far. Court does not find the state has met its burden for a consecutive sentence for the Moultrie County sentence, the court record stated. Essentially, the defendant's lack of prior criminal history combined with the sex offender evaluation, which finds him low to moderate risk of reoffending, does not support consecutive sentences, said the judge. The judge also fined the defendant $2,500 and ordered him to report to the circuit clerk to set up a payment plan within 30 days of his release from prison, now scheduled for February of 2027. The Shelby County case against Engler, a former teacher and track coach with the Okaw Valley School District, dates to the summer of 2024 when he was arrested by the Findlay Police Department. And it was as a result of those investigations that police uncovered information that led to Engler being prosecuted in Moultrie County. Engler was accused of targeting a Bethany girl, sending her lewd pictures of himself and requesting similar pictures from her. He had also written a journal in which he said he wanted to make the child his wife, police reports said. The case against Engler follows in the wake of another disgraced teacher, Christopher D. Davis, 38, who appeared in Moultrie County Circuit Court Monday and pleaded guilty to downloading images depicting sexual abuse of children under the age of 13. The former Lovington grade school teacher was sentenced to 180 days in jail, but the sentence will stay suspended pending satisfactory completion of 4 years probation. Drug dealer's career ends with 3-year sentence. Police said Carmen D. Bradshaw was a busy Decatur drug dealer right up to the moment he sold a confidential law enforcement buyer an ounce of crack cocaine for $1,000. The detectives and special agents from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives would move in, and the 48-year-old defendant found himself looking at a 3-year prison sentence. The sentence was imposed February 4th when Bradshaw appeared before Macon County Circuit Court Judge Jeffrey Geisler and pleaded guilty to drug dealing. The plea was part of a plea deal that also saw him admit to aggravated unlawful use of a weapon in an unrelated case. Geisler sentenced Bradshaw to another 18 months on that count, but ordered it to run concurrent with the 3-year drug sentence, so no extra time will be served. Information sworn out for an arrest warrant said that the drug charge dates back to October 5, 2023, when the straw buyer made contact with Bradshaw, whom intelligence operations had identified as a drug dealer. The buyer was wired for sound and video and provided with the cash to complete the deal. The warrant said that they had then traveled to a prearranged meeting place with Bradshaw, a house in the 900 block of West Wagoner Street. Bradshaw was then seen leaving the address by watching officers and agents and heading to the parking lot of a store in the 800 block of West Grand Avenue. A rental vehicle arrived a short time later, and Bradshaw appeared to conduct a hand-to-hand transaction with the passenger of the vehicle, the warrant said. Suspect in Decatur homicide arrested in Streeter. The Decatur suspect wanted for the murder of 26-year-old Jamarcus T. Golden was caught and arrested Wednesday, police said in a statement. Lieutenant Scott Rosenberry said defendant Timothy D. Chapman, 28, was found in Streeter by officers with the U.S. Marshals Service Great Lakes Regional Fugitive Task Force. Chatham was being held in the LaSalle County Jail awaiting extradition to Decatur. Police found the mortally wounded Golden after responding to reports of a stabbing just after 4 p.m. January 30th in the 1200 block of North Church Street. Rosenberry said Golden had suffered multiple stab wounds and later died at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Rosenberry said the investigation into the killing is not over, however. The Decatur Police Department continues to investigate this homicide, he added. Anyone with information about this incident is encouraged to contact the Decatur Police Department's Criminal Investigation Division at 217-424-2734. Again, that's 217-424-2734, or Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477, 217-423-8477. Prairieland Abate to host chili cook-off. Prairieland ABATE is hosting a chili cook-off beginning at 1:30 p.m. Saturday, February 8th, at the Abate Building, 1901 North Railroad Avenue in Decatur. Those wanting to participate can register from noon to 1 p.m. the day of the event. There will be three classes of entries, mild, medium, and hot. Entry admission for the cook-off, as well as the dart contest and broomstick billiards competition, will be $5 each. After they purchase a $2 sample, customers will be voting for the winner. Judging will end at 3 p.m. The Decatur weather forecast today will become cloudy with a wind from the northeast 6 to 12 miles an hour with a high of 40 degrees. Tonight, a bit of ice late. Wind from the east at 7 to 14 miles an hour and the low of 31. Tomorrow, Saturday, there'll be some rain and a thunderstorm. Wind from the east 7 to 14 miles an hour, high of 39, low of 25. And Sunday will become cloudy. Wind from the north 7 to 14 miles an hour, high of 32 and low of 23. Monday, cloudy. Wind from the north-northeast 6 to 12 miles an hour with a high of 36 and a low of 24. That's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, February 9th, 2024. For Friday, February 7th, this is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.